ॐ योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि. ऐ बौ टु दि एमिनेंट सेज पतञ्जलि हु रिमूव्ड् दि इम्प्यूरिटीस् आफ् दि मैण्ड् थ्रू योग, of speech through grammar, and of the body through medicine. In our last class, we have dealt very extensively with powers, special powers. When a yogi is practicing very sincerely spiritual disciplines, obeying all the instructions of the teacher, I specifically emphasize upon this because there are so many sincere people but they do not obey their spiritual instructions. They do what they like to do. It is extremely important that one should receive the instructions of a guru and then only they can really progress in spiritual life. When such a yogi starts practicing, a lot of powers come to him, especially in the advanced stages. In our last class, what did we deal with? Several powers like Animadi, eight siddhis, supernatural powers, Ashta siddhis. Besides that, remembering the previous lives and the ability to do whatever one likes to do. If any yogi falls a victim to these powers, his spiritual progress will be stopped, at least temporarily. Now we are dealing with the 47th aphorism, which I introduced as a result of doing Sanyama on the five characteristics of each of the five elements. As we all know, this whole universe is consisting of Prakriti in the form of five elements, Panchabhutas we call it. That is why a popular Indian name, Sanskrit name actually, Panchabhautika. Prapancha, this body is consisting of pancha bhautika sharira, consisting of, made up of five elements. As a result of analyzing these elements, two things happen for a yogi. We also can analyze, but we don't get the benefit. Why? First thing is, ours is an intellectual analysis, whereas this yogi is an experiential analysis. I'll give you a simple example what it means. Ramakrishna once had a desire to eat a sweetmeat called Sandesh, and he got it. What did he do? He put it in his mouth and he was describing graphically. I was moving it from one side to the other side, and then he started analyzing mind. Even this is made up of five elements, and the earth, the clay, mud, that is also made up of the same five elements, and therefore there is absolutely no difference between these two. And it was a real analysis. What was the result? From that day onwards, my desire to eat a sweetmeat or anything has totally disappeared. Like this, so many examples are there. Two things happen, I said. The first thing is, it is a real analysis. And the second thing is, he gets absolute control over all the five elements. A yogi can change anything into anything. He can change nectar into poison, poison into nectar. Since the topic came, just now I remembered a small incident. You know, there was a great soul in Varanasi called Trailinga Swami. When he was young, he was in that state of a Paramahamsa. And once some mischievous people, not able to understand him, they wanted to pull his legs. So what did they do? They put, we call it lime, and mixed it with water, and it is highly poisonous. And then they gave it to him, a whole pot full. Sir, we have brought milk for you, please have it. And simply he took God's name, Brahmarpanam. What happened? Nothing happened to him. Why? Because he had that yogic power. Whereas the people who offered him that so-called milk, they had terrible cramps in their stomachs, then they realized. And they fell at his feet as usual and asked for forgiveness, etc. Of course, a saint will always forgive. Now, in the Bhagavatam, we get these stories. Putana fed Sri Krishna with what? And what happened? Sri Krishna, did he die? Not only he didn't die, as a result of that he became even stronger and he gave liberation to Putana and everybody who gave him trouble. Anybody who gives him trouble, God will give him liberation. So easiest way for us to get liberation, go on giving trouble. You offer anything to God and he will accept and then he will convert it into Putana's poison has been converted into liberation. What else you want? Ravanasura's kidnapping of Sita was converted by Sri Rama into what? Ravanasura was liberated. Not only he was liberated, 14 generations, they also have been liberated. The idea is, whatever we want to do, let us connect it with God. That is called yoga. It's a beautiful concept, not directly related to our subject. Once somebody asked me, and this doubt comes into the minds of people all the time, Ramayana, when they read, how can Rama, who is such an intelligent human being, and how could he have as his army all these monkeys and wild animals and other things? So from the external point of view, it is not possible. See, the answer is, there are certain tribes who worship monkeys. They are also called followers of the monkeys. Otherwise, if you read the conversations in the Ramayana of Sugriva, so Hanuman and Vali and all, and Mandodari and Tara, they are far wiser than most of us human beings. How can they be monkeys? But the symbolism is, we are all like monkeys in our minds. If we are called monkeys, then we get very angry. But what are we doing inside? Jumping up and down. Who is not a monkey? Who is a monkey? It's very important for us to make this viveka. Whoever is not related, devoted to God, he is a monkey. And whoever is related to God, he is Nara. Making slight fun, there are two words. Nara means human being. Vanara means a monkey. If a vanara is devoted to God, he becomes a nara. And if a nara, a human being, is not devoted to higher ideals, what will he become? Vanaraha. In fact, Ramayana tells us, who were they? In their previous birth, they were all devatas, what we call. There is no equivalent English word for a devata. You can't call them divine beings. They are exalted human beings living in higher worlds. Due to their meritorious actions, they have attained to that state, enjoying. And when Rama wanted to incarnate, then he called all those people and said, all of you take birth in different regions, you will be my assistants. I won't tell Ramayana, but just one or two sentences. You know why Rama had to bring? Because Ravana had asked for a boon and he specified, by these beings I would not be killed. And Brahma said, yes, okay. Rama had no other option but to be born, to get the assistance of monkeys, etc. But he would be killed by a human being. And all human beings are not equal. That is one of the worst things that can happen. Coming back to our subject, everything has a significance. The only thing is, if we can somehow relate ourselves to God, we are blessed people. If not, we are lesser people. What is blessing? What is bless? Be less. Reduce your egotism. That is the symbolism. So we are discussing about these powers. Various powers would come. And Patanjali himself warns us, do not pay attention to those things. It will come in everybody's life, it will come. Now, we are introduced in my last class, 47th aphorism, Rupa Lavanya Bala Vajra Samhananatvadi Kaya Sampat. as a result of doing sanyama on the five aspects of each of the five elements. What are those five elements? Space, air, fire, water and earth. If anybody can make sanyama on the generality as well as on the particularity of these elements, then such a yogi gets the supernatural powers, many, many, many types of powers. The essence of this is, whatever the yogi wants, he will get. Because he is the master, through sanyama, he had become master of every element. He can change any element into any other element. There are legends going on that one king, he lost his diamond. This I heard like that. A great yogi was there in Varanasi and a great king came to him and then he wanted to impress the yogi or he wanted to show his devotion. And what he did, he presented the yogi with a very valuable sword. The yogi received it very laughingly and immediately threw it into the Ganges. And the king was very much offended. "Sir, it is such a costly sword and you just throw it away." Then the yogi said, "No problem, you just put your hand and where I have thrown, you will get back. What is there?" The king went and put his hand there and he took out. "A thousand times more valuable sword has come, not his." He said, "Is this your sword?" "No, no, give it back to me." The yogi took it. "Then you search again. Even more valuable sword has come." Like that, one after the other, most valuable swords were coming out of the Ganges. And at last, a bunch of swords have come. They have all been put in front of the yogi. And then yogi told him, "Now you choose which is sword." And then the king searched for some time and he found out his original sword, said, "You are valuing these things. I can produce any number of these swords at will. What is their value to me?" Funny incident happened, you know, when first Sri Ramakrishna was worshipping Krishna in Dakshineshwar temple, what happened? Some jewels were stolen. And Madhur Babu, he went and abused God. "Oh God, you are so," he didn't say stupid, "so weak, you could not protect your own jewels." Sri Ramakrishna got very much annoyed and said, "For you, they may be valuable. For him who created this whole universe, they are worthless trash. What are you talking about?" These are the sum of the powers that can come. A yogi can do whatever he likes because all the five elements are in his control. So that was what we discussed as a side result, as what we call fringe benefit. He gets another four powers. What is that? Rupa, Lavanya, Bala, Vajra, Samhananatva. The body, we are talking about the body. Beauty, magnetic personality, unimaginable strength, and the body becoming extraordinarily adamantine, like a diamond, it is said. We have discussed very briefly. I want to add one or two notes to it. Rupa means very harmonious body. Now, why does a yogi really need? Keep it in mind, not that every yogi looks very, very beautiful. Not so. So there are so many yogis, they do not compare with anybody else. But what is the point here? Every yogi, he has the power to change, but he won't change. He won't change because he doesn't value. Who wants to be beautiful? Only a person who is identified with the body. He feels that I need to attract people, I must be the center of attention, etc., etc. And such a person, he wants to. And if he is not beautiful, he will do everything in this world to look, to seem beautiful. What is all your cosmetic industry? What is it about? To make this body presentable. There are some yogis who are extraordinarily beautiful. Example, Swami Vivekananda. He was like a Greek god. By the standards of American journalist's description, like a Greek god. Then second power that comes is Lavanya. You know what is Lavanya? tremendous amount of attractiveness. There are some people who are very beautiful outwardly, not at all attractive. There are people who have magnetic personality. They may not be so beautiful to look at. They have got tremendous power of attractiveness. Whereas in Swami Vivekananda, both physical beauty as well as attractiveness were combined. Whereas in Sri Ramakrishna, physically he was not so attractive, but he had tremendous power of attraction. Just people would be drawn like flies. Lavanya, the tejas, a kind of special light used to come out of his body. Those who have studied his life, they know he prayed very hard. Oh mother, please take this beauty inside. I want inner beauty, not the external beauty. Afterwards, he said, his complexion, etc., had become a little bit dull. Compared to Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna's beauty is nothing. But compared to Sri Ramakrishna's attraction, Swami Vivekananda's attraction is absolutely nothing. Compared to us, it is billionfold. But compared to Sri Ramakrishna, it is absolutely nothing. Why do I say so? Whom are you attracted? If you have to take a choice between Sri Ramakrishna and Swami Vivekananda, whom would you choose? What is that attractiveness? There is something which will draw you out just like a magnet. That is called Lavanya. There is a science called aesthetic science. And in that aesthetic science, these are beautifully described. And our Indian aesthetic shastra, Alankara Shastra, more emphasis is given on the attractiveness, Lavanya, than on physical beauty. It's most marvelous thing, but it's not our subject. Third quality is Bala, tremendous Bala. Now if you compare the strength, Bala means strength, of Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna, etc., they are a little bit strong, but not that strong. What about your Muhammad Ali? I am the greatest. If Muhammad Ali and Sri Ramakrishna were to wrestle, who would win? What about Swami Vivekananda? What does that mean? It means two things we have to understand here. Their bodies, they have tremendous strength with regard to their particular speciality. What does that mean? Supposing a person wants to be a musician, what strength of the body does he require? Three things he requires. A beautifully structured, this is what is called the sound box, they call it. Vocal cords, not the whole thing. The second thing that is needed is the power of the lungs. And the third thing that is very necessary is general strength. You know, by reading these aphorisms, so many real life experiences come to my mind. There was one lady, Gujarati lady, whose voice almost resembles Lata Mangeshkar's voice. Very melodious. But she has no strength at all. When even microphone cannot enlarge her voice like that. Whereas Lata Mangeshkar, very strong, this is there. So the speciality of these people is, it is something very, very interesting. There was one Swami in Bangalore, and he was an extraordinarily good singer. When he speaks, you will see that you have to stand maybe 2-3 feet away to be able to hear him, so soft. But when he shouts, his shout can be heard at least 2 miles away. Here the tremendous strength is there. I have seen so many singers, you know, they speak very softly, but they have tremendous strength. There are some people whose voices are very sweet, but there is no strength. What is the point I am talking about? Each one of us, in our particular specialized field, we need strength of the body. Another example is, if someone wants to become a tennis player, he is not like a wrestler, requires a different type of body. A tennis player requires a totally different type of body. So everybody requires a special type of body with regard to his specialization. What type of special body does a spiritual person require? That is our main point here. A person whose body can stand straightforward, whose body can sit, the buttocks should be quite substantial so that even without any support, he will be able to sit very straight. You see, there are some of us, and we can't sit for a long time on the flat ground. It starts paining. But if we lean against the wall or put a supporting pillow underneath, we can sit for some time. But it is said of Sri Ramakrishna, it is Holy Mother's words, there was a small wooden seat, he used to take food sitting upon it. Holy Mother's graphic description was, his buttocks used to overflow, extend even that wooden seat. That means it was quite substantial. That is why whole night he was able to sit without feeling a little bit of pinch of, oh, my back is aching and all those things. Not to speak of sitting. You lie down also for more than several hours, you start aching. What am I talking about? That for spiritual practitioners, a special type of body is needed, where the backbone could be very straight, where they are able to sit for a long time without much support, and so that the mind can be focused upon this. Here I am not talking about the restlessness of the mind. I am specially emphasizing the restlessness of the physical body. So how important is physical body? That is why Swami Vivekananda always used to say, Nayam Atma Balahinena Labhyaha. A weak person, not to speak of realizing God, he cannot even realize a dog. What do I mean? There are lean and thin fellows who have huge Alsatian dogs, and these fellows want to take their dogs for a walk. And who is taking whom for a walk? We need strength. Can we acquire the strength? Yes, through exercise. So there are two types of exercises, as you well know. Yogasanas meant for strengthening the nervous system as well as the breathing system through pranayama. And there are freehand exercises for general health, etc. The whole point we are discussing is a yogi develops that kind of strength which is highly favorable for his spiritual practices for a long time without any disturbance. He can focus his mind on God. That is the point. Then, vajra samhananatvani. Sometimes, if necessary, their bodies become as hard as adamantine. One of the examples is Hanuman. Why is it necessary? Was Hanuman a yogi or not? He was one of the greatest yogis. Have you seen Hanuman sitting in meditation? A picture of Hanuman. What strong body. If anybody wants, his body is called diamond strength. Diamond's strength. That is why Bajranga Bali, you understand? What is Vajra? Vajrangi? Vajrangi. Vajrangi is degenerated into Bajrangabali, like that we call him. To render service to the world as an agent of the divine, one needs a tremendous amount of strength. Not only that, there is another subtle point. Swami Akhandananda, whosoever saw him, they recognized he is an askalita brahmachari, and some people wanted to harm him also. That's a different issue. But askalita brahmachari, his body was so strong, just by looking at the body, some highly advanced saints, they could recognize he is a great yogi. So that is called vajra sammanana. Sometimes it is very necessary. Anybody who has power over the five elements, not only he gets different type of supernatural powers, his body becomes very beautiful. If it is not beautiful, he can make it beautiful without visiting any cosmetic surgeon. And he will have tremendous mental power. This is also required. Willpower, tremendous willpower. And his body, if necessary, he can make it as hard so that even if you discharge bullets into him, nothing is going to happen, as though the bullets are touching some hard wall and then just pass off. These are some of the powers. We do not often see them, but they are exhibited by many people. The next aphorism says, Grahana Swarupa Asmita Anvayardhavatva Sanyamat Indriya Jayaha. The previous aphorism is talking about having power over the body, the ability to change the body into these four types. The next is Indriya Jaya. You know what things we have? First of all, our first obstacle is physical body. What is the next obstacle? Sense organs. What is the third obstacle? Mind. So all these are obstacles. That is why we have got all the three obstacles. That is why we do not progress in spiritual life. Though we wish to, we go on saying, why can't I be like a great saint? After 5 minutes, oh, I have to eat food. Otherwise, I can't even stand. This is our condition. Grahana, Swarupa, Asmita, Anvayardhavatva, Sanyamat, Indriya Jaya. Every sense organ. And how many sense organs we have got? 5 sense organs. Each sense organ have got 4 parts. How thoroughly our yogis have analyzed each and everything to make it easy for us. The first is grahana. What is the grahana? Whenever one of our sense organs comes into touch with a particular object, suddenly something happens. As soon as it comes into contact, it perks up as it were, and it sits down, and it manifests a special type of power called the ability to experience. The ability to experience. Simple example is, you are looking at me, and sometimes you are very good experts. You are looking at me with open eyes and not seeing anything. You are here, but you don't hear. Often, for every one of us, it is happening. Maybe it's for a short time. It is happening. Our mind just goes somewhere because some word takes us, and like websites, you know, one links to another, and then we come back. Maybe quickly we come back. I'm very generous. But our mind is so many times absent. But because the mind has that ability to retain the memory of what had happened before and what is happening now, somehow it makes a connection and it feels it's continuously we are experiencing a thing. Not really true. This is called the power of grahana. Grahana means receptivity. The eye has the power of receiving the forms, the colors. The ears have got the power of receiving what? Sounds. The nose has got the power to receive smells. Like that, there is a special power. Whenever an object is contacted, this special power has to manifest. That manifesting power alone gives us the experience, and that power is called grahana. Next is swarupa. What is the swarupa? Each sense organ has a special particularized field. The eye cannot hear. The eye cannot smell. The eye cannot taste. The eye cannot touch. The eye can only experience colors and forms. Now, this is the normal given wisdom. Is it true? In general, yes, it is true. In particular, no, it is not true. Because cases have been found, through the eyes one can hear, through the nose one can see, through the ears one can taste, one can touch. Peculiar cases are there, I won't go into it. But in general, every sense organ has a special power, and that power is called swarupa. Swarupa means its nature. So first, the ability to receive. Why is this distinction? Because the eye has always got the power. Its nature is to see. But does it always see? No. Only under certain conditions it perks up and the contact is made. For that contact to be effective, it has to be awakened. And this happens so fast, that is called the power of grahana, grahana shakti. Then swarupa. What is the third thing? For the eye to be able to see, it has to be connected with the one faculty called buddhi. Buddhi. Buddhi means that deciding factor. What is this? Oh, this is a man. This is a woman. This is a dog. That ability, it is seeing. And it is has the capacity to exercise its power. But to find out what it is always, it has to be connected with buddhi. And along with that, there is also I see it. I hear it. We don't use it. We always do not say because it becomes very redundant. I see you. Every time do I say I see you? We don't say it. I hear you. But that's what exactly, I see you. Every millisecond I see you. Every millisecond I see you. Every millisecond I see you. But we do not use it in our day-to-day life. So that is the third one is called asmita. You know, asmita means egotism. Egotism means what? I must be connected with every sense organ and the sense organ must be fully awakened. Then when it comes into contact, I know this. Similarly, the ear also says, I know this sound. And Patanjali goes to what a beautiful analysis he makes in the earlier we have discussed. Supposing you see a flower, then you see if this flower may have, this is a seeing flower in a general way, seeing flower in a particular way. What is the particular way? Maybe it is a combination of three colors, five colors. There is a fading color, there is a brilliant color, in between there are other colors, you know, whenever you see nowadays. The ability to distinguish the particularities, not only the generality, but also the particularity, those two powers belong to each one of the sense organs. So that is called grahana shakti. Then its nature is to experience its own particular type of field. And third is, always there is the buddhi, what we call, the deciding factor, which is involved. Without that, it is like a projector is going on, the cinema is going on, there is nobody to see. Even it happens to us also. People go on seeing and they sleep. Or they, if they look off, then the picture vanishes from their minds. So without that buddhi and the swarupa and the grahana, there can be no experience. Behind all this, there is one factor. What is it? I know this. What is the end process, end result of all this process? Only one. What is that? I know. The I says, I know. Through the I says, I see, I know. Through the ear, the I says, I hear, I know. Through the nose, the I says, I smell, I know. What is the end result of all the five sense organs? I know. Then, arthavatva. Arthavatva means each of the sense organs contributes to the overall general knowledge of everything that we see. That is called arthavatva. When a yogi develops such a power of concentration, he can say, this is the power of the sense organ. This its nature. This is determined by the buddhi. And here is ahankara. Do you see the four points? The egotism and the deciding factor and the nature of the particular sense organ and its wakefulness so that it can bring in the resultant knowledge. Now, in general what happens? All these things happen just in a flash. But when a yogi takes a knife as it were and then cuts and says, this is this. Then what happens? He gets absolute control over the sense organs. What does it mean? Let me give you an illustration. I gave this illustration in my past classes also. It is applicable even to us under unconscious conditions. But we all practice this. But specialized, Swami Sharadanandji, he was at mother's house. And you know, there is those who have seen, there is a small room at the entrance. As soon as you enter the mother's house on the left side, very small room, even now it is there. That's where he used to sit and write all these volumes of Sri Ramakrishna, the great master, etc. Besides administering the whole Ramakrishna mission, etc. And he had very few assistants. Now, there were some monks, young monks. And one day it so happened, these young monks, loudly they were cutting jokes and laughing. There was Golapma, she had even louder voice than anybody else. She shouted them down, you fellows, Sharat is going to be disturbed. He is writing something serious. Do not make any sound. Sharat Maharaj heard it. Then he turned to Golapma and said, Golapma, don't scold the boys. I am so happy that they are laughing. For a monk, you know, one of the greatest happinesses is what? Laughing. So for monks, it is a kind of anandas. So Sharat Maharaj turned to Golapma and said, You see, they do not disturb me. Now, what is the special power here? Special power is not that he was deaf. He was able to hear every single syllable there. Then he explained, I told my mind, even if you hear, don't be drawn. That means what? He was able to see, he was able to hear, he was able to do everything like anybody else. But the mind is kept absolutely, there is no reaction. This is called yogi's power. So that is what is being told here. Grahana swarupa asmita anvayardhavatva sanyamat indriya jayaha. What does it mean? By making sanyama on the objectivity, knowledge and egoism and the prakriti of the organs, by gradation comes the conquest of the organs. He will have special power over each and every of his sense organs. I will give you an interesting example. Sri Ramakrishna used to sit for meditation in front of the Kali temple. Devotees recollect, he used to sit, there is even now, there is a, what is called a special hall in front of Kali Mandir. It's called Natamandir. And above that Natamandir, even today you can go and see a small figure of a god called Bhairava. He was supposed to be the attendant of Lord Shiva. Sri Ramakrishna used to show to his mind that figure, and he used to say, oh mind, just as that figure, stone figure, is sitting unmoving. Does a stone figure move? Unmoving. So you should sit as long as you meditate exactly like that. Having said that, when he sits, graphically he was describing as if somebody was locking my joints from bottom to top. And so long as the same power does not unlock, this body had no power to move. Who gave that power? Who gave that power of being powerless to the body? Himself. He himself has given, he made a suggestion to his mind in the form of a prayer, thou shalt not move, thou shalt sit absolutely still. Swami Vivekananda, you remember, once he went with Girish Chandra Ghosh to Dakshineshwar. And 5 minutes, Girish Chandra Ghosh just got up because of the mosquitoes. Swami Vivekananda, he said, absolutely still like a statue, and his back and front was covered with a thick blanket of what? Mosquitoes, special mosquitoes. How could he do that? Because he trained his mind, oh mind, whatever be the condition of external conditions, you will just not be aware of the... He gave that power. So this is what we are talking about. By making sanyama on the objectivity, knowledge and egoism of the organs, gradually comes the conquest of the organs to a yogi. In perception of external objects, the organs leave their place in the mind and go towards the object. And that is followed by knowledge and egoism. When the yogi makes sanyama on these, on each one of them, he conquers the organs. Take up anything that you see or feel, a book for instance, and first concentrate the mind on the thing itself, then on the knowledge that it is in the form of a book, then the ego that sees the book. By that practice, slowly all the organs will be conquered. We can also have, what does that mean? That means, you see, you are sitting there and listening, and you can tell to your body, do not move, pay all attention to the speech that is being made. And it will be possible, you will not be able to move. But you will have to do this practice. In essence, what are we talking? A yogi has complete control over his body. A yogi has complete control over each one of his sense organs. Then we are coming to another extension of the same power. 49th aphorism. Tataha manojevitvam vikarana bhavaha pradhana jayascha. 3 additional powers come to this yogi who does sanyama on this fourfold division of each of the sense organs discussed earlier. What are those? Manojevitvam, vikarana bhavaha and pradhana jayascha. From that comes glorified mind, power of the organs, independent of the body, and conquest of nature. 3 powers. these three powers are called madhu pratika. Madhu means honey. Pratika means symbol. What does it mean? When a yogi gets these powers, his life becomes extraordinarily sweet. He will not have any disease, he will not have any obstacles, and even if there are obstacles, they won't disturb him. So life becomes extraordinarily sweet for such a person. His sense organs are absolutely under his control. There are so many examples are there. I will just give you one example. Lakshmana protecting Sita. In Ramayana, this is the story. And do you think he lacked eyesight? He had tremendous good eyesight. He sees everything. But what he did not see, excepting the ankles of Sita, he never looked up and saw anything of her. How do we know? When Rama and Lakshmana went in search of Sita to Rishyamukha, there he met Sugriva, you know. While being kidnapped, Sita had dropped some ornaments on the mountain, seeing some of these people there. And when the topic came up, said, yes, one lady was being kidnapped, and we had seen her being taken by Ravanasura, and she dropped some of the ornaments. Rama tells Lakshmana, you see whether they belong to Sita. And he looked, there were so many ornaments. He said, I don't recognize any of the other ornaments, I recognize only one ornament. What was that? That which she used to put on the ankle or the thumb. Because when he used to bow down, he used to only look at her feet. What is the point now? Lakshmana had such marvelous eyesight, but he said, you will not look at this lady because she is your brother's wife. Suppose by mistake he had seen, what would he be seeing in her? Only the Divine Mother. This is what is the powers that a yogi gets. Now, three more additional powers I said. Manojavitvam. What is Manojavitvam? When a yogi has this conquest of his sense organs by analyzing these fourfold divisions, then his body attains the power of the mind. That means he can move the body at the speed of the mind. That means 1 second his body is here. Next millisecond, it may be in Australia, it may be anywhere in this world. And Sri Ramakrishna demonstrated that power. He did not go to Australia, but he went to Dhaka. Vijay Krishna Goswami had seen him. And he used to come to Swami Vivekananda's place, Narendranath's place, from Dakshineshwar, in through that, not physical body, sometimes physical body, sometimes just Sukshma Sharira. What happens? The body attains the power to move like the mind. Tremendous power. Speed. Then vikarana bhavaha. The technical meaning of this special word is, each one of our sense organs are totally dependent upon this body. Suppose there is something 1 mile away and I can't see from here. What do I need to do? I have to take my body to that. Suppose somebody is whispering something there. I can't hear. So what do I need to do? I have to take this body nearer to that person. But for a yogi, he can keep his body here and he can hear, he can touch, he can taste, he can smell, and he can do anything he wants with any object in this whole cosmos. That power we already had discussed it. If a yogi wants to touch the moon with his finger, he will just be here and he will stretch and his finger will touch the moon. These are special powers. This is called vikarana bhavaha. The ability of each of the sense organs to function independent, and there is no time, space, limitation for these 5 sense organs. Okay, pradhana jayascha. Then pradhana is the special technical name in Sankhya for prakriti, nature. The whole anatma is called nature, pradhana. The name of that is called pradhana or prakriti, mula prakriti. These are different names. For such a yogi, he conquers the whole of nature. That means what? He can do whatever he likes with this. When a yogi had developed that power, now we are not talking about the powers. We are talking about ability to get those powers. when the mind has acquired such a tremendous power of concentration, then what happens? He comes to the very crux. What is that crux? My bondage is because I think I am the nature, I think I am the body-mind, and the body-mind thinks that this is pure consciousness. That ability to discriminate, what Sri Ramakrishna calls nitya anitya viveka, he has that tremendous power. His mind acquires that special power so that he can crystal clearly see this is pure consciousness, Purusha, and this is Prakriti. According to Sankhya, both are real. According to Vedanta, Prakriti is only seemingly reality. In reality, that is nothing but Brahma. Okay. Sattva Purusha Anyata Khyati Matrasya Sarva Bhava Adhishtatrutvam Sarvagnatrutvam Cha. This is the 50th aphorism. What does it say? By making Sanyama on the Sattva, Sattva here means the Sattvika Buddhi, purified part of the Buddhi, to him who has discriminated between the intellect and the Purusha comes two powers, omnipresence and omniscience, omnipotence and omniscience. What is omniscience? To such a person, he has the knowledge of everything in this world at the same time. We also get knowledge, but all our knowledge is time bound. What does that mean? Yesterday I learned 2 plus 2 is 4. Today I learn 10 plus 10 is 20. Tomorrow I learn 100 plus 100 is 200. Gradually. Day before yesterday I did not know. Yesterday I did not know. Only today I know 100 plus 100 is 200. For a yogi, there is no past, there is no present. For us, this is a very important concept. Time is linear. You understand what is linear? From low point to a high point, vertical. For a yogi, time is horizontal. That means there is no past, there is no future. It is all ever present. Everything he knows. Interestingly, this is connected with foretelling of the future. How does a yogi foretell the future? What does it mean? Even for us, when you are thinking of future, are you thinking of the future in the future? Or have you brought down that future to the present level? How are you experiencing the future? And how are we experiencing the past? Both the past and the future, they are experienced by us only as present. One in the form of a memory and another in the form of speculation. That is all we do. That speculation is based upon not wild imagination, but based upon certain existing, already known facts, known facts. That is how we calculate, you know. A simple example, you sit in the plane, and if everything goes all right, I sat down, the plane took off at 8 o'clock, and it will reach my destination tomorrow at 12 o'clock. We make the plans, we are already there. How did you make? Because of the known facts and past experience. For a yogi, time is purely horizontal. Not only horizontal, the another factor is space is horizontal and time is horizontal, and both are present right here. How is it possible? For God it is possible because God is everywhere. For God it is possible because God is every time. So a yogi who has developed that power, he also becomes one with God. When he becomes one with God, he is everywhere and he is eternity. Now incidentally, what is eternity? Very, very interesting subject. Whenever we try to think of eternity, eternity means, 1 billion years or 14 billion years from the time this Big Bang happened, and it goes on and on and on. Is it a horizontal concept or a vertical concept? It's a purely vertical concept. But whereas eternity means there is no past and there is no future. Now, if there is no past and future, will there be a present? These are mind-boggling concepts. The present is present only if we connect the past with the future. We can never think without these three divisions of the time. But for a yogi, absolutely it is here and it is now. Why? Because he is everything. When one is everything, what is the first thing he gets? All knowledge. This is called omniscience. And when a person has that knowledge, automatically the second power automatically accrues to him. Do you know what is that power? Omnipotence. Omnipotence means what? He can do anything. All power is called omni. Omni means all. Omnipresence, omniscience and omnipotence. In English language, first of all, there is a beautiful saying. Knowledge is power. That's what we are talking. If a person has got omniscience, automatically what happens? Knowing a little means having little power. Knowing much means having much power. Knowing everything means absolute power. Now you may say that we also know some things, but we don't have power. The point is, we don't know really. If we really know, we are not talking about intellectualized, imaginative type of knowledge. We are talking about real, real knowledge. When that real knowledge takes place, one of the symptoms or characteristics of real knowledge, do you know what it is? Every real knowledge must bring appropriate transformation in ourselves. I'll give you a simple example. We are all sitting and we are also feel very safe. But suddenly, imagine that you come one day and you are sitting here and you see a rope lying there. What do you see? A rope. What would be the reaction in you? I know, this is a rope. So, no need to do anything. And then after some time, slowly the rope is started moving and then raising its hood and then hissing, looking at you especially, you know, when we are frightened. Everything, every snake is looking at me only, not at other people. Then what happens? Instantaneous transformation in our body, in our mind, in our heart, in our blood flow, in our adrenaline, everywhere instantaneous transformation. Now what is the point? Before we had knowledge. What was the knowledge? It is a rope. So appropriate transformation. Now knowledge has come. What is it? It is a snake. Appropriate transformation. When a yogi really gets knowledge of everything, it's a most marvelous subject, I tell you. Then what happens? He gets tremendous power. Not only power to do what he likes, but here we are mostly what we are talking is, he doesn't get attracted. He doesn't get trapped. When a person knows what is the nature of everything, then he will not get attracted. Again, I'll give you an example. Here is a man, and when a man looks at a beautiful woman, and when a woman looks at a beautiful person, then they get attracted, isn't it? Suppose such a person, he has this knowledge. What is that? This woman, and his mother, and his sister, they are all exactly the same material. What happens? I can expand these examples, you know, that is called real knowledge. And when real knowledge comes, the man will have absolute control over these things. And he will not be tempted, and he will have developed compassion, mercy, sympathy, and selflessness. So many virtues automatically follow. This is a subject we will continue in our next class. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.